The events that we're learning about in Esther are not irrelevant to the situation today in Israel-Palestine. There are two people groups, Jews and Palestinians, and the majority are trying to live together or live side by side with each other in peace. But there are people in both societies who are committed to destroying the other. One side trying to drive the Jews into the sea, others trying to drive the Palestinians into the desert. And on Tuesday, we have a unique opportunity to meet Hind Khoury. She's a Christian lady from Bethlehem, and she is coming to Virginia Water. And around 3 o'clock, we're offering tea at the vicarage to meet her. She was the former Palestinian government minister for Jerusalem and ambassador to France. And if you'd like to meet her and learn firsthand what it's like to be a Christian peacemaker in Israel-Palestine, then just let me know you're coming, then we'll make sure there's enough cake and tea. Second part of the world where a very similar tragedy unfolded in the 80s was in Luwero, in the middle of Uganda. Two tribes, one led by Obote, one led by Museveni, fought each other. It led to 200,000-300,000 people being massacred. But in the middle of that triangle, the Luwero Triangle, a hospital was built by a Christian doctor, Chiwoko, and it's great that we have a link with that hospital as a church through the Christianity Explored course. Well, on the 16th of July, we are inviting you to come along to Stanley Park Wine Estate and help turn wine into water. We are aiming to raise £6,000 or £7,000 to supplement what's already been given to enable us to provide a well for a village where there is no water for several kilometres, for several hundred people. They have to walk every day, 3 kilometres each way, with water, carrying it for their families, and provide some school classrooms for the Goshen School in Nkondo Village. And we want to provide at least one more classroom to enable the kids to be out of the sun when they're learning in that school. So there's an opportunity there very practically to get involved in some peacemaking, some reconciliation work, and rebuild an area of Uganda which was decimated within our lifetimes. So two events I invite you to, both Tuesday and in a couple of weeks' time. Sleepless in Seattle. Sleepless in Susa. Things are not always as they seem. Once upon a time, a man was shipwrecked on an uninhabited island. He was the lone survivor. Over several months, he painstakingly constructed a shelter of pieces of wood salvaged from the wreck and from whatever else he could find on the island. That little hut became his only protection from the elements, the only place he could safeguard his meager possessions. But on returning from a long, lengthy search for food, he was devastated to find the hut engulfed in flames. He spent that night weeping, asleep on the sand, feeling like God had completely abandoned him. The next morning he woke to see a ship anchored off the island. And as the crew member stepped ashore, with a smile, he said, "We saw your smoke signal. We came to rescue you." What seemed to be destruction turned out to be deliverance. And such is the story of Mordecai in Esther chapter 6. He had been shipwrecked by an undercurrent of anti-Semitism on an island of injustice. And he stood under the very shadow of the gallows. Not only he, but his entire people. Every hope they may have sheltered them and protected them was up in smoke. But as we shall see tonight, things are not always what they seem. We've been studying Esther these Sunday evenings, and I don't know about you, but I'm really beginning to see that God is indeed sovereign. His plans are always providential. And throughout the entire story, we haven't actually read his name once, because God's name doesn't appear once in the story. And yet the invisible hand of Almighty God has been working behind the scenes on behalf of his people. It's just like the promise found in Romans 8, verse 28. For we know, says the Apostle Paul, that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And the story of Esther is the story of this verse coming true. We see God at working out his purposes for the benefit of those who love and follow him. And this evening, I want us to discover five little things we should know about a great God. First of all, when all seems lost, it isn't. Secondly, when no one seems to notice, God does. Thirdly, when everything seems great, it's not. Fourthly, when nothing seems just, it is. And fifthly, when God seems absent, he is truly present. First of all, when all seems lost, it isn't. For the Jews living in Persia in Mordecai's time, it seemed as if all was lost. Their protection had evaporated, their queen was ineffectual, their enemies were gaining in power and confidence. The sand in the hourglass was running out. Genocide seemed inevitable. It was only a matter of time before the Jewish people would be wiped out. But that's not the way things were. Because we read in verse 1, that night, the king could not sleep. The very night before Mordecai is going to be hung, that night, not the night before, not the night after, but that night, the king couldn't sleep. Maybe you feel sorry for the king. I'm sure he tried everything. Counting sheep, counting his chariots, counting his concubines, nothing worked. Okay. But don't you find it very interesting that on the very night that Haman is ready to kill Mordecai, that's the night the king can't sleep? You know, sometimes God's miracles are not so much what he does, but when he does it. When he does it. When he does it. Behind the scenes, God is at work. His providential plan to deliver his people was fitting into place. The king had already given Esther an audience. He'd offered her everything she requested, up to half his kingdom. But none of the Jews knew what was happening behind closed palace doors. Not even Haman knew. Consumed by his desire for revenge, he was too busy building the gallows for Mordecai. Now, it would have been very easy for Mordecai to get discouraged, even depressed. No one seemed to remember he had already saved the king's life. And now it was his life that was at stake. No one remembered his service to king and country. But remember, when all seems lost, it isn't. It isn't because, secondly, when no one seems to notice, God does. Just when the shadow of death seemed to be at its darkest, there was a ray of light shining into the king's bedroom, and he can't sleep. That night, the king couldn't sleep. So he orders the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in to read to him. That was going to get him back to sleep. You know? History. It was recorded there that Mordecai had exposed Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. What honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this? The king asked. Nothing has been done for him, his attendants answered. Think about it. Of all the texts that could have been selected by the librarian from the record of Xerxes' 12 years reign, isn't it amazing that the one containing the account of Mordecai uncovering the assassination, Esther chapter 2, that's the one that's read to the king on the night he couldn't sleep, the night before Mordecai's going to be executed. Yeah, I know. Coincidence. Yeah. So let me ask you, can God direct us in the little things of life? Is there anything that's big for God? Can God direct in the books that people pick up and read? Yes, he can. I'll give you one example. February 1916, a young student bought a book from a used bookstore on a railway station. He'd looked at that book and he'd rejected it a dozen times. But on that day, he bought it, and it was called Fantasties by George MacDonald. You've probably never heard of George, but he was one of the finest writers of children's books in the 19th century. And reading that book eventually led to that young man's conversion. And his name was C.S. Lewis. Probably the greatest and most popular defender of the Christian faith in this century. He later wrote to a friend that he picked up that book by hazard, by accident. No, he didn't. Chuck Swindoll says, "Often momentous events hang on the slenderest of threads. Often momentous events hang on the slenderest of threads." Here, the deliverance of the Jewish people was precipitated by something as insignificant as insomnia. While all Susa slept, the king lay awake. A reminder to us that God is not distant, he is not indifferent, he sees, he cares, and he intervenes. So while the king tossed and turned, Mordecai was asleep. In spite of the fact that no one seemed to notice, God did. So let me ask you, can you empathize with Mordecai tonight? Do you feel like you've been overlooked? Feel like you've been bypassed or sidelined in the company? Others have been rewarded with promotion for work that you did. You've never been given the credit. It even happens, sadly, in church circles. Dedication and sacrificial service is not always acknowledged or appreciated in the way that it should. But if you can identify with Mordecai, please don't become resentful. Hebrews 6 verse 10 says, "God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you've shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them." Though we may feel abandoned, we are never out of God's watchful eye. We are never far from his protective care. So remember, when all seems lost, it isn't. Because when no one seems to notice, God does. And because of those truths, the third one is true also, that when everything seems great, it's not. As soon as the king heard that nothing had been done to reward Mordecai, he immediately sets out to rectify the situation. The king said, "Who's in the court?" Now Haman had just happened to enter the outer court of the palace to speak to the king about impaling Mordecai on the pole he'd set up for him. His attendants answered, "Haman is standing in the court." "Bring him in," the king said. And Haman entered. And the king asked him, "What should be done for the man the king delights to honor?" Coincidence? The king sought advice from the very person who was in the palace seeking Mordecai's destruction, not his decoration. But thinking that the king wanted to honor him, Haman let his greedy imagination run riot. Haman thought to himself, "Who is there that the king would rather honor than moi?" So he answered, "For the man the king delights to honor, have them bring the royal robe the king has worn and the horse the king has ridden, one with the royal crest placed on its head. Then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on the horse throughout the city streets, proclaiming before him, 'This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor.'" But Haman's jaw drops when the king reveals the name of the recipient. "Go at once," orders the king. "Get the robe and a horse and do just as you've suggested for Mordecai the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you have recommended. You know, this must be one of the funniest scenes in the whole Bible. Haman had devised for himself, he would have to provide for his enemy. And what he had constructed for his enemy will be used for himself. You know, there are three ways to gain rewards in life. The first one is to reward yourself. This is the most popular means of reward, and it's the one that Haman was trying to do. And most people try and do it this way. They will fiddle their expenses, they will embellish their CVs, they will put photos of themselves with famous people on the piano or on the boardroom wall. It is the root of all temptation. More people destroy their lives trying to reward themselves than any other way. Slightly better than that is let others reward you. It's better than doing it yourself, but it doesn't last very long. The trophy you get today will be sold in the charity shop tomorrow. Chris, who lives with us now, is wearing a lovely sweater that I'm envious of, and it says BMW Championship. He got it from the charity shop Friday, for about £4. It's only about a week old. Someone had been given it at the BMW Championship, the PGA at Wentworth, and they decided they didn't want it. They'd given it to the charity shop. The trophy you get today will be sold in the charity shop tomorrow. And then thirdly, the most important way, is allow God to reward you. This is the best way, because although no one else may see it in this life, God knows, and it will last for eternity. It will last for eternity. James writes, "Don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows." So allow God to reward you in his time, in his way, and it will last forever. Proverbs 18 verse 12 puts it like this: "Before a downfall, the heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor." The first half describes Haman, the second half describes Mordecai. Proverbs 29 says the same thing: "Pride brings a person low, but the lowly in spirit gain honor." My question tonight is, which side of that comma are you on tonight? Which side of the comma are you on tonight? Pride brings a person low, but the lowly in spirit gain honor. Remember, when all seems lost, it isn't. Because when no one seems to notice, God does. Because when everything seems great, it isn't. Because when nothing seems just, it is. Someone famous, probably, once said that the mills of God grind slowly, yet they grind exceedingly small. The mills of God grind slowly, but they grind exceedingly small. Haman found himself to be but a tiny grist in the mill of God. His life was under judgment, and it was only a matter of time, and it wasn't very long, before he figured it out. Verse 12. "Afterwards, Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman rushed home with his head covered in grief, and he told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had happened to him. His advisors and his wife, Zeresh, said to him, 'Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin.'" Not exactly what Haman wanted to hear, is it? But before the warning from his wife could sink in, and before Haman had poured himself a stiff drink, he was whisked off to the royal banquet. And the fateful end he had so meticulously planned for Mordecai would be his own. Things are not always what they seem, are they? When all seems lost, it isn't. Don't give up. You can have victory through the Lord Jesus Christ. When no one seems to notice, God does. His power, his presence, his providence. We've seen all through this book, every page, He is working in your life as well right now, even though you may not realize it. Because when everything seems great, it isn't. Haman is a tragic figure. He is a warning. He was filled with hatred and yet was given many opportunities to repent. But his hard heart got harder and harder. When nothing seems just, it is. In the end, God will work things together for good. He will reward the faithful and punish the disobedient and rebellious in his time. Perhaps in this life, but certainly in the life to come. Paul writes in Romans 8:31, if God is for us, who can be against us? The lesson in the reversal of the fortunes of Haman and Mordecai is really very simple. When God seems absent, he is truly present. And if you haven't got it yet, if you're still figuring it out, then let me leave you with some advice from the pen of a senior demon. In C.S. Lewis's book, The Screwtape Letters, we read a warning that a senior demon gives to a fledgling demon that could have been inspired by the lessons learnt from Mordecai. This is what C.S. Lewis wrote. He said this in the, from the perspective of the senior demon. He said, quote, our cause is never more in danger than when a human, no longer desiring, but still intending to do our enemy's will, looks around upon a universe from which every trace of him seems to have vanished, and asks why he has been forsaken, and still obeys. Remember, things are not always what they seem. Don't give up. When God seems absent, it is more to do with our perception than reality. For God is indeed always, completely, truly present.